everyone. This is Dr. Candace, and welcome to Kidding Around. Thank you so much for listening. Today, we are talking about congenital syphilis. And we have my guest that's here with me is Dr. Bonde Virgil. She is a pediatric hospitalist. She is also the clinical assistant professor of pediatrics for Mercer University School of Medicine, Columbus, Georgia campus. Now, one of the reasons why we want to talk to her today, because she has found, and there's been some articles in the news, so this is hot off the press, she has come and encountered several cases of newborn syphilis, which is congenital syphilis. She covers a newborn nursery and on a busy mother baby floor. So we're going to talk to her about that today, how in the world this happens, and go into this topic of congenital syphilis. But I want to tell you a little bit more about Dr. Virgil. She's awesome. She's another doctor who is expanding her medical expertise to the world, to the community, and branching out, not just doing that clinical thing. She is the CEO of the Mommy Doc. She's also a writer, and she's a mother of two, and so she wants to share her expertise as a mom and a pediatrician, help parents shift through the mountain of information on social media, putting an end to mom shaming and mommy wars between different parenting styles. And that's something we're going to have you back to talk about, because that's very important. That happens all the time, and we always chat with parents just out at a game with our parents, kids doing things, and inevitably all these styles come out and you get side eyes and she does that. Oh, I don't agree with that. So we'll talk about that subject. That's really important thing to discuss, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So welcome. Hello, Dr. Virgil. Thanks. Thank you for coming to Kid Around with us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you. So congenital syphilis, can you tell us what that is and how are newborn babies getting syphilis? How's that showing up?
Yeah. First of all, thank you so much for having me on to talk about this topic. You know, I was literally discussing with residents when we were rounding in the nursery that, you know, someone needs to put out more public awareness campaigns about syphilis and congenital syphilis, because, you know, we're definitely seeing an uptick. So what is it? As you mentioned, a congenital infection is one that a baby gets from birth. So they have it right as soon as they're born. And so congenital syphilis is actually a bacterium infection that a baby gets from their mom. And it is actually an STI, a sexually transmitted infection that goes from the mother to the baby.
So to break that on down, mom contracted this while she was pregnant.
Correct.
Through sexual activity.
Correct.
And this baby, some kind of way, the infection is passed on to the baby. Basically.
That's right. All right. Yeah. And so it can either be that the mom had always had the infection. Right. She's had this STI and didn't know that she had it, or maybe she just contracted it while she was pregnant. And so because they're sharing the same blood supply, it can pass on to the baby. And then the baby then has their own syphilis, which is the congenital form, which has all its challenges, which, you know, we're going to discuss within the next segment.
So one stat that I found, and if you look on CDC's website, they have a big campaign about congenital syphilis is increasing in the United States. In general, STIs are on the rise.
Yes.
Syphilis specifically has had bumps over the last 2 years in its rates. So that means more moms have syphilis, more babies are being born with syphilis.
Correct.
It's a source of major health problems. Babies can die from it. They can have long-term, long-lasting chronic problems from that infection. And the big thing, what makes it so sad, is that it's preventable.
That's right.
So that's our message today, and we're going to go into all of those elements and pieces about congenital syphilis.
Yes.
So why do we think the rates are on the rise?
So, you know, it's multifactorial. As if you look at sort of the historical data with congenital syphilis, there's always been the concern about access to prenatal care. So a lot of the campaigns, you know, with other STIs like HIV have been getting moms to their, you know, OBGYNs, to get that prenatal care, because that's the opportunity to capture the illness. The other challenges that we're finding is that there's incomplete therapy. So someone may be diagnosed with, you know, syphilis during their pregnancy at some point, starts the treatment, and then maybe doesn't get the complete treatment, or it isn't for the right phase of syphilis, because we have to remember that in the mom, syphilis has stages. So there's the primary syphilis, there's secondary, tertiary, etc. And your treatment therapy is going to be guided based upon what stage of syphilis they may be in, okay? So those are some of the challenges. And then, of course, the partner getting treated. So let's say we treat mother, and mother gets the therapy and then goes and gets reinfected again. So her titers are going to go up rather than down, and that's also a risk for the baby. So there's so many factors, but, it's primarily the lack of prenatal care. And it's amazing that in 2017, we are still having a significant challenge capturing women during pregnancy. With all of our initiatives that we have, some of it has to do with the culture of, drug abuse and use. Moms who are involved in drug life or sex trafficking are more at risk. So they fall through the cracks in the system, or if they're moving, if they're in a transient population, they get lost in the cracks of the population as well.
Absolutely. So thank you for going over that whole piece of how a mom, the different ways she can get the infection, whether there's subpar treatment, whether she doesn't complete the treatment, whether she gets treatment or not, because some people don't know, or they may know, and because there's a stigma there, they just run from the health system and don't get treatment because they're embarrassed. So like you said, it's multifactorial, and this is why we're seeing an increase in the rates and in babies that are contracting it. So a baby's born. How do we know that they have syphilis? What's the, diagnostic criteria, or do they look a certain way? Let's explain that.
So again, this is sort of multifactorial as well. Yeah. So, nothing in medicine is cut and dry, henceforth the art of medicine. But, what the CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the World Health Organization have done is a really good job of having a consensus approach to this. So, we don't necessarily have to guesstimate. But generally, if the mom has had a reactive RPR, in other words, she's positive and her confirmatory test is positive, you go ahead and there's actually something called the safety first kind of approach, where you assume the baby has it as far as going further with the diagnostic testing, and you do a very detailed clinical exam. So you're looking for things like hepatomegaly, which means enlarged liver. You're looking at the baby's skin to make sure that there aren't any rashes. You're looking at the baby's eyes. You're looking at several different physical findings on the child's snuffles, and not just the normal newborn congestion, but actually a significant, thick discharge that this baby would have. So those things, in the context of a mom who's positive and has positive titers, would let you know that this is a child that you need to do further testing on. So, but the other thing with this, because it is sort of complicated, yet there's this great algorithm, even if the child has a normal exam in the face of a mom who has that RPR titer that's positive and the confirmatory test that's positive, you would go ahead and then start with the first stage of screening with the infant getting their titer. Okay. And this part is really important, because what you want to do is get the mom's titer at that time and compare it to the infant's. And so using those two tools of diagnosis, you can compare the infant's levels. So there's a ratio of this titer, which lets you know how much the syphilis is still infiltrating the mom, and you compare that to the baby. So if the baby's titer is higher than that of the mother, then you can assume that the baby therefore is still, has syphilis, congenital syphilis, and then you go down the path of treating them as such. So that's typically with a 10-day course of penicillin, okay? But, if they're equivocal, generally you would do at least a penicillin injection on this baby. So stepping back from all of that minutia, really when a mom is RPR positive with titers that are positive, you're going to at least treat the baby with one dose of an antibiotic. And the reason that we do that is, again, going back to that safety first concept, the risk of the baby being missed and not being treated for this syphilis is greater, much, much greater for this child as far as their long-term well-being than a single dose of penicillin. It becomes more complicated if their titers are elevated, then they have to get you know, lumbar punctures. They have a longer term of antibiotic therapy, but that's kind of where we are with this right now. So having that RPR titer positive from mom and a reactive baby commits this baby to treatment at least times one.
Right. So we're erring on the side. We're erring on the side of caution.
Caution. That's right.
Algorithm.
Yeah.
You're ready to go. You're looking out for this because it is on the rise.
That's
now, we talked briefly before doing this talk today about there still is some people that fall through the cracks or some holes in this cheese, basically, because, you know, there may be some moms that come in. So I'm guessing a mom comes in with no prenatal care. You don't have any health records. She has a risky health history, maybe as far as drugs or sexual activity, things of that nature. Then that raises your antenna. That's like a positive risk assessment for multiple types of STIs.
That's right.
You know, including, you know, HIV and things of that nature. And then I'm guessing at that time, that's when you may do this RPR on the mom or on the baby as well, including other testing.
That's right. And that's exactly it. Getting back to that safety first approach. These moms who are entering really late and have this high risk history, you're going to go ahead and assume that this baby has it. You know, there are several factors that are complicated in addition to what we've already discussed. But, you know, let's say this mom was having a primary infection and just recently was positive, you know, for syphilis. The baby, you know, may not have even had an opportunity to have all of that response. However, long term wise, there is still the risk for the baby because there was an infection during the prenatal experience. So that's kind of the nuance that makes it a little bit more complicated. And again, because we know that there are long-term effects to the child's vision, hearing, bone development, heart, brain, all of that, we do err on the side of caution and we are quite assertive and aggressive with therapy and evaluation early.
Okay, so you gave us some signs and symptoms.
Yes.
As you just stated, it affects multi-systems, you just named that, and we have the diagnostic testing that we use and the treatment. You talked about penicillin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing this is curable if you catch it at the right time.
So that too is a complicated issue. So curable, the risk, the long-term risk of morbidity, in other words, the well-being of the child and certainly the mortality are minimized when this child is treated within the first 3 months. There's clear data on that. You know, all the literature supports that. However, there are some things. For example, some of the bone changes, the stabrosions in the lower extremities, and some of the eye changes, which in about 2 to 8% of kids can still actually manifest even if they're treated. So to say that it's curable, it's not necessarily curable, but the prognosis and the outcome is so much better when we treat these children with the appropriate therapy. Because again, a lot of it is gonna be based on mom's history. And if we don't have a clear history of mom's you know, symptoms, if we don't know if it's really primary or secondary, most infectious disease providers, pediatricians would recommend going to the higher threshold. So treat for the sequela that you think is most serious. So, you know, we're like, again, we're pretty aggressive with that. But generally, most children will do well. We do follow them for that first year of life. So you're repeating their levels to make sure that there's no increase in their titers. So the actual mycobacterium aren't multiplying, the spirochetes, as they're called, aren't multiplying. And then you are also looking for some of the changes. You know, if this is a kid that you might do a hearing screen on, this is a kid that you're going to do a much more detailed cardiac exam on. So you're going to do a much more detailed ophthalmologic exam on. So, that's always a fun word.
It is, right?
Yeah, and so that's what you will do with these children. So one of the other challenges is if you are someone like myself who is a newborn nurse with hospitalist, is now translating that communication to the pediatrician that will continue the baby's care is so essential.
Yes,
because they need to know this history and then sometimes the convoluted nature of the history so that they too continue that high threshold of evaluation each time they see the baby.
Right. Because as you said, things can manifest 3-6 months out. That's right. There needs to be an open loop there with all involved.
That's right.
I imagine in the hospital, you guys may even consult pediatric infectious disease.
Absolutely.
And they come to the pediatrician, you know, when they're discharged, but the pediatrician should make sure that they probably follow back up with the infectious disease specialist.
Absolutely.
And so everybody is on board and working together so nothing gets missed with this case.
That's right.
Absolutely. All right. So you've already given us some outcomes. Like you said, the eyes, hearing, bones, liver involvement, heart. It affects the whole body in a sense.
The whole body system.
And
yeah.
Any one of those systems that's affected, they may need specialists for that.
Exactly.
Eye specialist, a bone specialist, orthopedist. So it can get pretty, like you said, morbidity. It's chronicity. You can have some long-term chronic problems from this.
That's right.
And you said most kids do well if they're fully treated, adequately treated, treated as soon as possible. That's the message. Right. Early detection and early treatment is always the key. Pretty much every talk I do, that's always the message.
Absolutely. So, which is wonderful because it simplifies the message.
There you go.
But then the element of the challenge is getting folks to actually
making it happen.
Make it happen.
Knowing
yeah.
and doing yeah. is two different things.
That's right. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
Now, one piece that you and I talked about, and I really want you to get this out to the audience, is prevention. So prevention in all of its elements, how important is that to these cases?
Because I described, you know, those two situations, the Sabershins and the keratitis, which can still manifest even if you're treated adequately, prevention is essential, right? Because the way that you minimize any problems with the child is to make sure that they are not, born to a mom who has syphilis.
Right.
So if we use our condoms every single time that we have sex, that is one level of protection. If you are going to get STD screening on a regular basis, that's another level of protection, not just when you enter the OBGYN services, but if you're someone who is a high risk population, which is pretty much anyone who's having sex, you should be screened on a regular basis whether or not you are pregnant. And so prevention really comes from knowledge and knowing that you are at risk and that there are certain behaviors, i.e. using a condom every single time, you know, knowing your partners, minimizing partners, getting screened, that help prevent this. Because if the child never is born to a mom with syphilis, then we don't even need to have this conversation. This is a non-issue.
That's right.
Yeah.
And when the first trimester testing is recommended, because no one can make you get a test, right? You can refuse it, and people do refuse. Don't refuse it because you don't know.
That's
you can't
right.
just look in the mirror. I look great. I feel great. I have nothing. I don't want you testing me. Deny yourself. Deny your emotions. Deny the potential shame you may have if you have a positive sexually transmitted infection. Think about your baby. A lot of people think the wound is closed. Whatever I get is just in my vaginal area. It doesn't affect the baby. That's not true. Okay, and this is one of those cases where it absolutely affects the baby. So accept the testing, follow up on the results. If it's positive, please make sure you complete the therapy and you get treated. Then, if you continue, because this test is usually done in the first trimester, that's within the first 3-4
months.
Yeah, so
they do it in the first trimester, and that's, you know, kind of like the standard ACOG, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology guidelines.
Right.
But like you mentioned, sometimes there are subgroups. If you are someone maybe who is considered to be less at risk, they may excuse you from the screen.
Right.
But like you said, you should not opt out of this one. You should really not opt out of any screen because with syphilis, being that it's usually a painless sore that you have, it can actually even be intravaginal. In other words, you may not even see that you have the sore. We can be asymptomatic as women, as can be as men can be, and not know. So it's really, really important not to opt out of this. And you know, I just want to underscore that as you have underscored it. And then in some high-risk populations, there's a lot of literature now that's circulating that there should be a repeat screen.
That's where
and
I'm
so, concerned. Yeah, and I think we talked a little bit about this last night, and you know, I had some conversations with colleagues of mine who are OBGYNs. There is no universal recommendation for that right now. But that's something that, particularly in women that are incarcerated, again, women who are, you know, involved in sex trafficking or women who just have high risk behaviors, that may be the new recommendation down the pipeline.
Right. And that, yes, that's it, because it probably needs to be retesting within those guidelines that we use for treating and figuring out if they're high risk or not for syphilis, a retest before birth or within a few months or so to make sure.
Exactly. So, kind of like how we do our group B strep screens, maybe something to that nature.
There you go. Now, also, you mentioned this, and I want you to share this. Another element of prevention is something that you guys have done, we've done successfully with HIV, reaching back and having a parlay or a conversation or a plan with the obstetrics to now make this change where we're thinking about syphilis. Because with HIV, used to be a lot of congenital HIV cases. And I think we've done a good job with saying, okay, guys, test, okay, retest, okay, risk assess. Make sure if they're high risk, we need to consider it again, send over the information, everything about it to communicate and get it taken care of. And this may, since it's on the rise, this may be something that needs to be done again. What do you think about that?
I absolutely agree. I think this is an area in which the collaborative efforts of both the OBGYN and the pediatrician community is paramount. It's kind of like with breastfeeding, with HIV in pregnancy, you know, we're more successful in managing this and, again, minimizing the potential problems when we have the baby, you know, delivered, when we work collaboratively. And so, you know, I think that ACOG and the American Academy of Pediatrics need to have more conversations, you know, collaborative efforts in that essence, because we're operating in our silos. I'm sure they're seeing the uptick of the cases in pregnancy, but we're also seeing the uptick of the congenital syphilis. So, you know, there are real life manifestation issues for the child without getting this addressed.
Right.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about, you mentioned RPR, you mentioned some conditions, specific named, neat named conditions from syphilis when the baby acquires it, you know, saber shins and brachytic rosaries and keratitis and these different conditions that you name. Without going into that, it'll take a lot of time. I want you to give our audience some resources. So we started the conversation, and this is the main gist of the topic, that this is preventable. It's deadly. It's very harmful to kids. So get treated. That was the message today, just to give you a background about it, that it's occurring and on the rise.
That's right.
I want you to take the information. Dr. Virg is going to give you some resources, and then go look at all the details. Hopefully it'll scare you and go, woo, I'm going to get my testing, and I'm gonna make sure I don't have this, because that's not one thing I want to pass on to my baby. Go look at how devastating this can be to a child, okay?
Yeah.
So, Dr. Virgil, give us some resources.
So, I always recommend that parents start with the Centers for Disease Control website. It is phenomenal, extensive, lots of evidence-based material, lots of information that's what I call palatable for the regular person. So there's not going to be a wealth of like medical jargon. This is basic understanding of what could happen. And just to reiterate what Dr. Candace is saying, you know, we don't want to necessarily terrify you, but we do want to terrify you, because I've had conversations with some of my younger patients in particular who have said, this doesn't exist. This is a 1950s phenomenon.
Yes.
But syphilis is here. It is here. It has not gone away. We were almost on the cusp of eradicating it, you know, around the 1990s, where the rates were going down a lot. But there's a resurgence. And so we have to respond. And so start at the CDC website. Easy, www.cdc.gov.
Yes.
Also, you can look at the World Health Organization website. Now, that will give you more global information. And of course, always the American Academy of Pediatrics, because ultimately, you know, this will become a pediatric issue for the patient that gets it, because we as pediatricians have to follow and make sure that this patient is doing well overall. So those are my three top resources. But number one, CDC.
There you go. And then also for parents, or moms, expecting moms or women who aren't expecting yet, but you still need to get tested if you're sexually active. Where can women go to receive this testing so that we're in the prevention area and this doesn't even happen?
Yeah, so really what a lot of states have done is relied on health departments for testing. But when you are in partnership with a primary care physician, whether it's your internal medicine doctor or your family medicine doctor, your GYN, this is something that you want to recommend that they test you for. A lot of times they will make GC, gonorrhea, chlamydia recommendations for annual testing, HIV, but add this into that collection of exams. You could also go to Planned Parenthood in some areas. And so there are a lot of community clinics. If you are a college student, you can go to your campus clinic and they would do STD testing at your campus clinic. So there are a lot of different avenues, but I was, the health department, and for whatever reason, has all of the connotations that whether negative or positive for some people, but it is a great resource for STI testing. So sometimes we call it sexually transmitted disease, sometimes we call it sexually transmitted infection, but I'm using them synonymously and it's a great resource for that.
Absolutely. So there's no reason why you cannot find somewhere to go for free.
For free.
For free. Tested. Yes.
That's right.
And
that's
confidential.
That's right.
It's your business.
That's right.
It's confidential.
And I will just add, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, once you find out you are positive, do not have sex with the same partner until they have been treated. And so that's the other piece, because you can do the right thing as far as treatment for yourself and obtaining treatment, but if your partner does not get treated, you will get reinfected.
That's right. Huh? So important. Don't take one step and then go back again.
Go backwards.
That's right. So important. Well, that's all for today. Wanted to keep it short and sweet and give you some wonderful information that affects the woman and the baby. This is that's on the rise. So we got to get on top of this, ladies. Thank you so much, Dr. Virgil, for coming on my podcast, Kidding Around with Dr. Candace. Hopefully you guys learned a wealth of information from Dr. Virgil today. A lot of good information, and we will talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Have a great day.